John Sable, Mary Becker, our guests this evening as we talk about their interesting and unique take on investigating locations that are paranormally active. John, do you have, when you go to a place that maybe is not known to be haunted per se, but it certainly is rich in environment and history, can you still go in there and by peeling back these layers and by putting yourself into that time era, get responses from that time?
Yeah, yes. I mean, I only focus on places that I've researched, and doing the research, I found out that there are multiple layers of different memories that are attached to that place. I specifically go to those places, and I try not to go to places that have been too overdeveloped through ghost hunting, because that kind of changes the dynamics of the place. It kind of puts more contemporary layers of memory as opposed to past layers of memory there. So I try to go to different places that have multiple layers of memory. For example, we're just doing this. We just finally got to go and do some research at the where Mary works at the Omni Bedford Springs, the Bedford Springs location. And every Saturday night now, including tonight, we do a special form of ghost tour there that combines a lot of archaeological excavation work and a lot of ethnographic, anthropological immersion work. And what we're finding is that during the tour, a lot of the guests are having experiences while we try to immerse them into the ambience of what occurred in the past in the hotel. Now, tonight I showed the guest two photographs that were taken by one of my friends who came to visit us before we conducted the tour about 3 weeks ago. And so in the swimming pool area, the indoor pool area, he just took a random photograph of the pool. And when he saw something strange, like off in the distance at the other end of the pool, so he zoomed in on it. And what we got is a presence, a specific full-body individual. You could see he has a hat on, he has big eyes, he has a mustache, you can see his clothes, and you see his one foot is standing up on top of a planter. And this individual looks like some of the photographs that are on the wall in one of the restaurant areas. Now, we went today and we showed this to some of the guests. And I told them, you know, they like to be photographed. They like to be photographed. So please take a lot of photographs because you never know what you might find. So one of the guests, the female guest, took a photograph showing a long shot of the same pool area. And then she didn't say anything initially. And then we moved on to the next location. Then all of a sudden she comes running up to me and says, look, 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 the photograph. And we looked at the photograph, and behind the photograph of this man that I was just talking about, behind him in this other photograph taken today by the woman, is that same man. Incredible. I mean, but he's in a different position. He's behind the glass behind the door, as opposed to be in front of the door. But it's the same man with the same clothes. So that was really kind of interesting. It seems that if we resonate, no matter where we go, if we in a place that is not really well investigated, a place that is not well known being haunted, and a place that does not promote it being haunted, we finally got in to do some of our research, and just by resonating with what occurred through these immersions, even with the guests, they are getting responses that they immediately see during the tour. I thought that was kind of interesting.
Now, I'm curious, Mary, when you go with John to these locations, which might have been, you know, heavy in men with these areas, especially in war areas, do you get responded to? Are they seeing you and noticing you there? And what kind of responses do you get when you're in that situation?
Definitely, you get responses. As a woman going on to a all-male battlefield, John's showing me something. I'm sorry. I can't read it because I'm on my glasses.
Singing.
Oh, such as when at Antietam at the 11th Connecticut, I read a letter from a doctor, a surgeon, who stayed in the back of the troops, you know, because he's there to assist with the men on the field. And so I read a letter to his wife that he wrote after the battle to say what it was, to say what happened, and also to explain, oh, I had the lock of your hair, and it, somebody stole it, or I lost it somewhere. So I read it very emotionally at the monument. While I was reading it, we heard, you could hear like footfalls around me. Also, there was a video camera on a tripod, and it was physically moved, but no one was around that tripod. And out on the perimeters, because we never have people up close. When you're doing a scenario, it's just you. In this case, it was just me with the letter at the 11th Connecticut. Now, outside of, like, a few feet away, you'll have people with audio in real time, also just audio recordings. Then outside of that, we're piggybacking everything. Then you have the video of cameras, and then we have people taking photos. And then beyond that, we have observers watching everything. So, you know, we're seeing all this thing. We're hearing it. We're smelling gunfire, the sulfury smell of gunfire. We're smelling cigars. And then while I was reading the letter, you could hear, I could hear wolves out in the, like, far away howling. It was just amazing. On the audio, and I believe you have it, is when we have, like, soldiers singing to me. Now, I did not hear that, and I don't believe anyone else did. It was on the audio recording after we did the investigation that night, a few nights later.
Is that the audio with you reading with the soldiers?
Correct.
Okay. Well, why don't we'll play that then real quickly, and then go to commercial break here and continue talking with our guests, John Sable and Mary Becker. Let's hear this audio. We'll play it twice real quickly. At Antietam, it's Mary reading and the response from the soldiers. I believe it's cut number 13, I believe. Yep.
It's been so long.
Wow, so you can hear this male-like voice sing-songing while you're in the middle of reading this letter out loud. Let's play that one more time. But again, Mary, this was nothing you could hear directly. This was only through the recording.
Correct.
All right, let's...
What's interesting, Dave, is you could hear him say home. What was interesting is it's like he was looking over her shoulder, because right after he said home, she read the word home in the letter.
Oh, okay. So it's like... there's an immediate response and reaction to what's being done and said. Okay. We need to take a break. We'll come back. We'll continue. And again, we'll open up phone lines next hour. If you have questions or your own experiences on any of these historic sites, we'd love to hear from you. We'll do that next on Coast to Coast AM. All right. We are back. And John Sable, Mary Becker, our guests, as we talk about this anthropological and archaeological version of paranormal investigating, ghost hunting, putting yourself into the realm, into the time of these hauntings to see if you can make a connection. You know, a lot of the questions I'm getting in private message here is, when you're directly connecting to people in eras like this, do you ever deal, either one of you, with attachments, with things that want to follow you home because you're giving it the energy, attention, and you're resonating at its vibration?
I've been doing this since 1969. That was my first archaeological excavation in Winchester, England. I used to, during the day, I did archaeology. At night, I did then what was called ghost hunting. And in all those years, from 1969 to the present, I have never had an experience of any negative entities, demonic entities, or any form of attachment from any of these places. So maybe I'm just lucky, or I don't know, but I've never had any problems. I don't think Mary has either.
No, I've never had any attachments to me at all. You know what I feel from this is that they're just trying to tell you what's happened to them. Everybody loves to talk about themselves, and this is what they're trying to tell you. This is what's going on. They're trying to tell you, yes, there is life after death. That's what I take from it, and they're trying to tell you their story, not me telling my story to them or making them do what I want them to do. They're trying to tell me in the best way they can what happened to them.
Now, there is an attachment, but it's their attachment to a place, a space, an experience, a memory. So we resonate with that attachment that they have, so that makes, I guess that makes them feel, I don't know, secure, or makes them feel good, or makes them remember that why they still attached there. So I guess they don't feel the need to reattach to us, because they already attached to a memory that they hold dear. That's why they're still there.
All right, we've got one of the pieces of audio says Thompson Cannon Guns. What can you tell us about this piece of audio we're going to listen to?
Okay, there was in the Fifth Assault, it was the 51st New York, and we have a photograph taken days after the battle that showed five burials along the stone wall near Antietam Bridge. There were five soldiers. We have identified each of those soldiers based on the grave markers. And there were five soldiers of the 51st New York. One of them was a Private John Thompson, who subsequently was disinterred and reburied in the Sharpsburg Cemetery, the Union Cemetery of Sharpsburg, which is where the town, where the Battle of Antietam took place. So Private John Thompson, we had Mary, I think, or one of the investigators, dress up as a relative of Private John Thompson, who went with a lantern along that same stone wall searching for her lost loved one, i.e. Private John Thompson. And she asked, could anybody tell me what happened to Private John Thompson? And then and then you hear it in a six-second delay, and then there's a pause, and then right after that, boom, like an explosion, like somebody saying, this is what happened to Private John Thompson. He was blew up, or he was you know, blasted with a shell or something. So that's the audio.
All right, let's go ahead. We'll play that. That's audio cut number five.
Could anyone tell me what happened to Private John Thompson?
That's what happened.
What? Play that one more time. Now, that's fascinating to me. Shoot that one again for us.
Could anyone tell me what happened to Private John Thompson?
Now, that sounds huge, but that, again, that was not something you could audibly hear. It was only through the recording.
Right.
And that was Investigator Kat Gash, just so you know.
Oh, wow. Okay. And then one of the last ones we have here says Holmes here. What can you tell us about this piece of audio?
William Holmes was actually, that's why we went, one of the reasons why we went to Burnside Bridge, because Lieutenant Colonel William Holmes is still MI. He defended the bridge with the 20th Georgia. And he said that he will hold the bridge or die in the ditch. So during the Fifth Assault, the Confederates, it was actually Burnside Bridge was called the Thermopylae of the American Civil War. It was like 287 Confederates against 11,500 Union troops. And it took the Union five assaults to get across the bridge. And the only reason why they got across was because the Confederates ran out of ammunition. They were not reinforced, and they were ordered to retreat, except Lieutenant Colonel William Holmes, who said that he will hold the bridge or die in the ditch. So his men retreated. He advanced. He was hit multiple times as he advanced. He went down. five soldiers whom we identified of the 51st New York came across, stripped him of his clothes, took his brand new boots, dragged him across the bridge, buried him along a stone wall. His body has never been recovered. He is still MIA, buried somewhere along that stone wall. So we had Mary and another investigator portray his female relatives after I looked in the 1860 census to find out who was in his household in the 1860 census. They dressed as his relatives, portrayed his relatives, went with lanterns, looking along the stone wall, asking, Colonel Holmes, where are you? Are you hurt? This is your Aunt Tilly, or this is your Aunt Mary. Where are you? We're looking for you. And then this is the response that we got.
All right, go ahead and play cut number six.
We can't find you. Where are you? Are you here?
Play that one more time for us.
Yeah.
Colonel Holmes, we can't find you. Where are you? Are you here?
So you get a response. Now, were you able to kind of pinpoint the area of where that response was coming from?
Exactly. I mean, that was a shortened version of a longer response. And as they went, we get a voice that says, I'm over here. And then they keep on walking down along that wall. He says, over here. And they keep on walking. And he says, here. So we marked out where here is. 6 months later, we did it again with a different team of females. Same voice. Same location. So we know where here is. Now, I want to go and petition the National Park Service to get ground-penetrating radar in there and see if there's a disturbance where here is located and see if there is a disturbance that may indicate a burial and do an excavation there. Hopefully, we will find the remains of a soldier still buried along that wall. Maybe it is Lieutenant Colonel William Holmes.
Wow, do you think that there would still be remains visible in that site all these years later?
Oh, yes. I mean, you know, look at Richard III. I mean, he was buried under a parking lot for 500 years.
All right.
And they found him fully intact.
All right, we got the one other piece of audio that you sent back over to us. We don't have enough time to get to it right now because we're going to be heading into a break in a minute or so. So we'll get to that when we come back and continue to talk about this. Going into these locations, do you ever, when you're trying to resonate with that, do you ever try to, how do I want to put this? Since you're trying to resonate with that time era, once you start making communication, do you ever try to reach out past that to see if they will be responsive to you in present day? Meaning, you know, are they aware that that you don't belong ever?
Because I'm telling you, we really fully immerse ourselves. We try to use the vocabulary of the time. We dress the time. We don't use any kind of behavior that would be against what the behavior of that time was. So I don't think we get any negativity in any of the responses that would indicate that we're doing something wrong and they don't want to talk to us. I mean, at Antietam, the first time we went in there, I designed about 15 scenarios. We got through only about three or four scenarios because once they start communicating, they just love to keep on talking, and we keep on communicating with them until they're finished. And at 2 o'clock in the morning, I finally went up the top of the hill overlooking Burnside Bridge and Antietam Creek, and I says, thank you, men. Thank you for your bravery. We honor your presence here. We you know, and all that stuff. And what happened after I said that? There was, all these gunshots. This is 2 o'clock in the morning. It was as if they were saluting me for acknowledging their presence, acknowledging what they did, and things like that. It was just amazing. I just started to cry. I mean, it's just amazing.
Let's take a break, and we'll come back. We'll continue discussing this. Go check out the website, Ghost Excavation. We'll open up phone lines at the top of the next hour here on Coast to Coast AM. Thank you for joining me this evening. We will be back with you March, I think, 4th. I'll be hosting Coast to Coast AM. Bill Scott will be my guest as we talk about his book, The Day Satan Called, which talks about an exorcism and possession in a story unlike any I've ever heard before. So please join me and mark that on your calendars. We'll be back with you on March 4th. And I also want to make a quick mention here. A lot of people don't realize this. I mentioned it the last time I was on the show. George Norrie has set up ParanormalDate.com. So for all the listeners of Beyond the Darkness and Darkness Radio that are tuning in and checking out Coast to Coast, maybe for your first time, or you're just driving along listening and this is the kind of topics that intrigue you, well, George Norrie has found a way to bring people together. If you are intrigued by the strange, the supernatural, conspiracies, and more, then he'd like for you to meet other people just like you, maybe your new best friend or the love of your life. Go to ParanormalDate.com, approaching 59,000 members. 59,000 members. That's a pretty good chance you're going to meet the person that could be your new best friend or spend the rest of your life with you. ParanormalDate.com. All the information's on the website. You can sign up. You can try it out for free. And if you like it and sign on, you might meet that special person you've been waiting your whole life for. And also, I encourage you to check out, if you've missed any part of tonight's show or any of the shows and you wish there was a way to listen to it again, well, there is, and it's an immediate gratification thing by becoming a Coast Insider. You can sign up for about 15 cents a day for a one-year subscription. It'll give you access to 5 years of past archived shows. You get fascinating interviews, some exclusive content, and more from Coast to Coast AM. So go check that out. When we return, we'll continue talking. We've got some more audio to play from Mary and John's investigations. We'll do that when we return to Coast AM. Welcome back to Coast AM. I'm your host this evening, Dave Schrader. All right, John, Mary, we got the piece of audio we spoke about earlier. Talk to me a little bit about this before we play it again, just so I know what it is that we're listening and what the listeners can listen for on it as well.
Present and future one.
Or the Schrader.
Or which one? The Schrader?
Oh, no, it's the one that had multiple layers, kind of playing the past, present, and future all at once on the EVP.
Okay. There's actually two of them. I don't know if there's the one where Mike Stevenson, the investigator, is talking, and he's talking about somebody's moving his canteen, or it's us running up the Ruhrberg Farm Road toward Burnside Bridge as if we were the 11th Connecticut attacking the Confederate forces. If that's the one, if it's the latter one, what it was is we had just done the...
Yeah, it says battle scenario, Rohrbach Road, Union Avenue.
Okay, what it was is we had just done the 11th Connecticut roll call. After we did the roll call, after we assembled the men, I ordered the men to do the first charge. So what it was is we began charging up the road, Ruhrberg Farm Road, where the 11th Connecticut charged up toward Burnside Bridge. So in the audio, what you're going to hear is you can hear us maybe running up the road. In the background, you'll hear soldiers fighting and guns going off and rifle fire and cannon fire. You also hear insects, crickets chirping simultaneously. And then off in the distance, you hear a hum that's getting louder and louder and louder and louder as it's coming closer. What it is a plane in the distance coming closer into the present. So what you got then is the past, the soundscape of Civil War battle, the present, crickets chirping and us running up the road, and future, a plane coming into the present.
Now, you haven't, and with this, you're not playing soundscapes while you're on site. It's not like the cannon fodder and gunshots we're going to hear.
No, we're not doing anything. All we're doing is just walking or running up that road and opening up the audio and see what happens. As a response to the roll call, assembling the men and then ordering the men to charge up the road. But we didn't add anything else to that.
All right, let's check that out and play the audio now. So you can hear what sounds like all of this yelling and kind of background fodder going on during this, and you guys are just walking up the road quietly at this point.
Exactly. And I guess you didn't hear. I couldn't hear the chirping of the crickets or anything like that. But it is on. Maybe it's on the other audio. But that other stuff is like the plane coming closer and closer. But you could hear the men shouting and screaming. And sometimes you can get you can hear a shot coming in there. But that's just how we recorded it. I mean, that's how we played it back, and we heard that. And said, "Wow, this is cool."
But that was not going on while they were walking.
Yeah, we didn't hear it live, but we got it on the audio. We didn't hear anything live. And you can hear that clicking sound. That's us walking through the brush and bumping into the fences and stuff like that as we're going up that road and hitting rocks and stuff like that, because it's a dirt road and
right.
There's all kind of debris on the road. So you could hear all that stuff, but you could definitely hear the men shouting and screaming and fighting and stuff like that.
Very strange. All right. When you're going out into these different environments and you're trying to communicate and connect with the different time eras, when you're doing that, do you get much bleed over of other things that just seem out of place? You're not hearing anything physically, but you're recording gunfire fodder and then, you know, people drinking coffee and chatting and laughing. I mean, do you ever get multiple layered EVP like that?
We get multiple sensory elements. Like, for example, simultaneously we get audio, we get tactile, we get movement, we get smell, all occurring simultaneously. Like when Mary was reading that letter, we got the smells coming in. We got only the females in the background that are out of the scene being touched. The smells being touched, the audio equipment on the tripod being moved in front of us, the sound of the soldiers, footsteps coming in, animals in the background. So we got all that occurring simultaneously as she's reading that letter. So it's not just EVP. It's what I call EOC, ethnographies of communication, multiple elements of communicating of a specific memory in a specific place, of experiences of humans in a particular situation.
But as far as a flip over from time, from other times or eras, I don't know. I don't think that's ever happened to us since we've been doing this.
Yeah, they all seem to be contextual to the scenario that we are doing. But that's a good thing to think about too, because we should be more conscious of if there's anything else bleeding coming into it. Now, we have another audio. We have it on the website, but we haven't sent it to you, and we have to find it. But while we were doing the roll call at the 11 Connecticut, there was another audio between the names that came through, and the audio said, "Are you Stedman?" And I said, "Stedman? Who is Stedman?" I mean, we looked at the 39 soldiers who died during the first assault of the 11 Connecticut. There was no Stedman on there. So I thought it was some kind of maybe a bleed from a radio show dealing with Oprah Winfrey and Stedman, her boyfriend at that time. Then 2 days later, I did some research, and I found out that a Major Stedman of the 11th Connecticut replaced Colonel Kingsbury, who died during the first assault toward Burnside Bridge. So me, dressed as a Union officer during roll call, someone thought I was Major Stedman, apparently. And there's no way we knew anything about that, so it's nothing coming popping out of our heads out into the environment that we recorded. It just unbelievable. That's another thing that's, you know, something that happened without anticipation. Kind of really neat.
And, you know, I know, unfortunately, a lot of times when we play back EVP over the system, our equalizers and some of the recording equipment that we use will blend out some of the background noise. So I think we're missing out on some of that opportunity. So I would encourage you to go check out their website and listen to some of the audio direct from their site as well. You might get a little bit of a better feel, especially if you're using headphones, you'll be able to hear these things a little better.
Yeah, because the stuff that we sent you that you were playing back, that is as it was recorded. We didn't enhance it in any way. So maybe by enhancing some of that stuff, we might pick up a lot of other different things, you know?
Right. And you know, I've got a lot of people that are popping in questions through the emails. We'll work those in the next hour. And if you want a phone call in, if you've been to any of these historic sites and have had experiences of your own, we'd love to hear from you. If you have questions for our guests regarding this type of immersion into a paranormal situation and trying to make this contact, we'd love for you to be there. Do you ever do much with like the sense of meditation in these locations, trying to put yourself mentally into there to see if you can one with it?
I did an investigation with a few people who were Native American, and they mm-hmm. would meditate. They would meditate before they go out into the field, and they seemed to be a lot more sensitive to what was going on in their surroundings. So that would be a good thing to do, I think.
But also, when we do an investigation, we never just go, hey, let's go meet at such and such at 9 o'clock at Antietam at the bridge, and then we'll start doing things. We start early in the day. It's an all-day thing. We may start around 3 o'clock. John and I have been doing research for like days on end, even sometimes a month. Then we meet right about 3 o'clock. We start talking about it. We get everybody's input. We have people add in things. If they think, hey, I know this, or I know this for a fact that this is what happened there, or my relative was there at that battle, or, you know, something along those lines. So it's an all-day thing. So by the time we get to the site, because we never discuss at the site, we wait till we have the whole plan and everything put together, plus the storyboard that John does, we have it all together. So when we go to the site, we are immersed in those characters.
Everybody's on the same page.
It's a very detailed, it's very exhausting, but it's very rewarding at the same time.
All right. Now, we've got a couple of pieces from the Knickerbocker. Talk to me a little bit about this investigation, and we'll fire off a couple of these before we go to the top of the hour.
I'm not sure which ones you have. I know there's one where I was... there's been sightings
of
children, I believe, on the second or third floor of the Knickerbocker. The Knickerbocker is no longer a working hotel, per se. It's just an investigative tool that Peg Nick, she will allow only certain groups to go there. So it's not like a free-for-all there. It's very interesting. I was playing a counting game because I was trying to think. Kids would usually like, I seem to attract children. I don't know why, but I do. And so I was thinking two things that came to my mind right away because people were listening to recordings and say, hey, there's a child here. So I started doing counting. And in one scenario, I was counting forward. The child was counting backwards. I would count 1 through 10. They would count 10 to, you know, to 1.
Only like number 5.
And
I think we've got Knickerbocker boy counting. And where are you? Is that the audio piece you're talking about?
I believe so. Go ahead and play them, and then I'll explain them.
Let's play. That's a cut number 9. Go ahead.
All right. You'll never find. Come out.
We've got the best shot.
You must
have. I'm having a heck of a coin. Keep going, Mary. Now, something in the background, it's a little bit harder to hear and pick up on. And again, I understand there's going to be some of this is... artifact of replaying it over the radio, but I wasn't necessarily hearing the numbers being counted back.
I think we heard like him saying 5. This boy really liked the number 5 for some reason.
So he kept saying, so while I was trying to play hide and seek, you kept hearing 5, this little boy's voice, 5, 5. I believe that's that one. Yeah, it is hard to hear on our cell phone here.
Now we've got the Knickerbocker male voice saying thank you. What is this in response to? What are you doing?
We don't remember. It's been a while.
All right, well, let's go ahead and play cut number 11 and see if we can hear the male voice saying thank you.
Ducks,
tell me again, say hello to me tonight, if we are already about.
Thank you.
Wow, that was very clear.
Yeah.
Play that one more time for us real quick, Nathan, if you don't mind.
Tell me again, say hello to me tonight, if we are already about.
Thank you.
Yeah.
All right. Very cool. What do we got? A few minutes left here in the before the top of the hour. We'll open up for phone calls. Are there places that you have yet to go that you're really hoping to get out and investigate that just haven't been available to you yet? Or have you pretty much hit most of the places that really intrigue you?
Oh yeah, I mean, there's places in Budapest. We were just in Budapest in April last year, and just amazing. I mean, they have all of these underground caves and caverns and stuff like that, all kind of things during World War II, and even going back to the 15th century. Vlad Tepes, better known as Dracula, was imprisoned in an underground cave. In the labyrinth. I mean, that's amazing down there. I would love to go down into that place. Also in the Southwest, I lived in San Antonio for about a year. All of the Spanish missions along the mission trail going out of San Antonio toward the Mexican border, now there's all kind of intermixtures of Native American, Spanish, and all kind of weird entities going on, non-human entities, I think. Even at Gettysburg, I mean, people talk about Gettysburg and they talk about Civil War soldiers. At Gettysburg below Little Round Top, there is, I think, that we've contacted a Wendigo or a bunch of Wendigos behind the Little Round Top going down toward the second, where the 20th Main charge down the hill below into that woods. There is something there, and it has the appearance of a Wendigo based on what's going on there. That's kind of interesting there.
Plus, everyone who goes into that area in Gettysburg of Little Round Top, you cross over this one little broken down stone fence, and almost to a person, you just don't feel it. Feels that's about the only time I think I've ever felt bad in an area where I felt like, okay, we got to go. We just can't stay here. And that's very rare that I've ever felt that way. I think that's the only time.
I think I'd like to investigate Ford's Theater, too. I mean, especially the actors who were involved on stage and then behind the scenes, you know. I'm pretty sure it was a traumatic experience for everybody, but the actors on stage, I mean, when you do it
from their perspective.
From their perspective, yeah. We had tried to do a sizzle that was, I've done about 5 sizzles in the last year or so, but unfortunately, somebody said, you know, you're too old to do this kind of stuff.
I don't think they know what they're talking about. Yeah. No, just tell them that puts you even closer to talking to the dead. That should make it even more sense, right?
Yes. I said, you can see me in the field. I'll tell you how old I am in the field. I'm telling you, I'm really psyched up in the field. I, just amazing. I'm too old to do this stuff. I can't host a show on TV because I'm too old. Give me a break. Yeah.
You know, John, we'll start our own group. We'll call it One Foot in the Grave Paranormal Team. And we'll make this connection. I'm with you. We need to take a break. And when we come back, we'll start taking your phone calls, your questions, your own encounters with these locations. And have you been in a historic site where you can hear direct voice phenomena taking place around you? Audio recordings. We'd love to know what your experiences and thoughts are. We'll do that when we return to Coast AM.